changes.
Turn and face the strange
changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
All right, let's welcome into the studio Nick Bowen from AFL.com.au. G'day, Nick.
G'day, Kev. How are you?
You've just been experiencing the terror that is junior cricket.
I have. The young fella out playing under 10s today, so a lot of wides, a lot of no balls, but they just got done in the end in a very close match.
Oh, well, as long as they get out there and enjoy themselves and get a bit of exercise and have a bit of fun.
Exactly. It's good to see the kids sort of running around. I think, you know, for cricket, you know, it's one of the ones my boys have probably got in there a little bit later than footy, so it's good to see them get into it and you know, get around, bowl, have a bit of a bash and enjoy the fielding as well.
Is there mandatory retirement scores? If you get to sort of 30, do you have to...
It varies from team to team. It seems as though you get a two batsmen who'll bat for four overs, and if they get out, they can't score any more runs off the bat, but they get to keep batting for the four overs, which I think is great that they get that four over hit. So it's a real big emphasis on participation.
Now the big the big word in footy at the moment, just to touch on, I know neither of us have read the whole book yet, but we've seen little excerpts of Paul Chapman's tell-all biography that's come out, or slam-all biography, maybe.
Yeah.
He's had a crack at a few of his former teammates.
Well, he packed a punch on the field, didn't he, Chappie? And I think he certainly seems to pack a punch when he's gone into his autobiography. He didn't play with Brendan Goddard for very long, both obviously going from their main clubs to Essendon in the twilight of their career, but he's sort of... he's given Brendan a bit of a whack from what I can see. I think that the general gist of it is that Goddard said openly that he wasn't there to make friends, and I think Chapman said, "Well, if that was his intention, he made good on it."
He was very successful.
Yeah, it sounds like he's pretty. I imagine Brendan's trying to be that senior hand in an inexperienced team, and to provide some leadership. But perhaps from Chappie's point of view, he's gone about it. Perhaps gone overboard in his correctional sort of advice, I suppose.
I saw a very funny quote on Facebook this morning saying, he yelled at me, "Where's your man?" And, and I yelled back at him, "He's right here. Where the what's it is your man?" So there's a little bit goes on. And then I think the rest of the quote was, "I didn't think it would be a good look if we were both screaming at one another in the middle of the ground."
No, not two senior sort of hands. And it's been a really tough sort of period for Essendon. And I think, by and large, Brendan Goddard's been really good in the three seasons he's been there. I think, from memory, he won the best and fairest in his first year. I think he was runner-up from memory in his second year. So very good footy. Perhaps had a bit of a relative, you know, not as high a standard this year. But I think, by and large, he's been a pretty good good servant for the club. I think he's been probably a spokesperson the club's turned to, given that he hasn't had that involvement in the wider thing. So he's someone that they've been able to wheel out to press conferences. And it's probably been pretty tough for him because he joined up before knowing that any of that stuff was really hovering over the club.
Yep.
So I think he would have thought that, look, I've got a chance to go to Essendon and perhaps play in a flag. That obviously hasn't happened and doesn't look likely. But yeah, I suppose behind closed doors, it's hard to know what sort of influence he was in the group. We do see him. He's a very demonstrative person. I think he always wore his heart on his sleeve at St Kilda as well.
Mm.
So I think that's the Goddard package. Like it or don't, and I think obviously Chappie didn't like it.
I'm not that against actually having a crack at your teammates when they don't do what they're supposed to be doing. If that's the case, I mean, you may have got it wrong a couple of times, and I think we all do that. But if you make a mistake in your job, 9 times out of 10, the boss will give you a kick up the bum.
Well, it's honest and constructive feedback, isn't it? I think it's probably gets back to like a coach giving a team a spray. And I know Brad Scott always says that, look, it becomes a blunt instrument if you use it too often.
Yeah, true.
And perhaps that's the thing for Brendan. If he's doing it all the time, people start to get a little bit over it. And I mean, obviously, no football is perfect. So if he's drumming this into the kids and he's not living that himself in his own football, that's when I suppose you start to get in a bit of trouble and seem to be being in a bit of a glass house yourself.
Yep, the do as I say, not as I do type thing that as parents we have to deal with all the
time.
Correct,
it's worked for me in my parenting.
Nick Bowen's in the studio with me from AFL.com.au. If you want to get involved, by all means, give us a buzz, 9429 1116, if you want Nick's thoughts on how your club went in the draft. The Jake Carlisle thing, I think he's back in the country now?
Yes, he is, yeah.
That's going to be a tough couple of days for him and probably deservedly so.
Yeah, look, it is. I think, you know, it's not an ideal situation to join a new club, and is it? And I think just the fact that I think that video was out there and St Kilda didn't know about it and could have known about it before the actual deal was done. I think that it sounds like, well, was Carlisle's manager knew about it. So I think that that adds a little bit of, I suppose, friction to the whole saga. That's not Carlisle's fault. But look, I think joining a club, and I don't know whether you saw the Peter Dixon special that he did on the documentary on the captains this year.
I saw bits of it, yep. Yeah. I thought it was, the bits I saw were terrific.
I think Nick Riewoldt really, really impressed me, just the no BS sort of attitude he had in that. And, I mean, he's got that standing in the game, doesn't he, that he can get away with it. He can give those directions. I think there was one time there on the track, and he said to David Armitage, mate, none of that, those rubbish around the set, you know, around the body shots, you're not Stevie J.
Yes.
Well, I think it was that. So I think he'll be a completely no-nonsense, Jake Carlisle, tell him exactly how it is.
Yep.
And I think that that's what Matt Finnis was saying on the Friday, that, you know, here's Carlisle coming back to this. He's going to have to deal with a pretty irate, I think filthy was the word he used, a filthy Nick Riewoldt. So I think he'll be told in no uncertain terms that you don't do this again. This is unacceptable down at Seaford.
There'll be another sort of box put on when you... negotiating with a player manager now. Is there anything on video that we should know about before we sign this contract?
Yeah, it's look, I would have thought that full and open disclosure is the expectation, isn't it? And look, I don't know the exact circumstances behind this, so I won't go too far with it. But I think if you're a manager, you know about this video, surely you get on the front foot. I mean, I realise that might jeopardise the deal, or it might change the financial package that the club's going to offer your
client. Well, that might happen anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that you've got to... it's warts and all. And I think that... the problem was, I think that that negotiation was at such a delicate point that Essendon and St Kilda, for that whole trade period right up in the end, seemed to almost work at cross purposes. You know, you had Essendon trying to get other clubs involved to put pressure on the Saints. I think the Saints were trying to shore up Carlisle and say, well, look, you can do all that sort of stuff, but if the player wants to play for us, well, that doesn't really mean anything. So... So finally they got together, and I suppose that the danger, if you're Carlisle's manager, and again, I don't know the full circumstances, but saying theoretically, is that if you've got this explosive video, you may not have seen it, but know of its existence, what does that do if you throw it in the mix? Do the Saints all of a sudden say, you know what, this has been hard enough as it is, it's too hard,
yep,
we're going to bail out, and then you've really only got a day left in trade period to perhaps get him to where he wants to go. There's the offer on the table from the Hawks.
Yep.
Does that still stand? If this video is in existence, so it was a complex enough situation, and I think that video obviously would have perhaps really thrown things, the cat among the pigeons.
Yep, and I think the cat will still be among the pigeons for a few days yet.
Tough start. He's got to pull his head in, and I think, you know, get there and show that he's ready to go and deliver on what's going to be a sizeable contract. You're getting into a club on an estimated $650K a season.
Jeez.
You're expected to not only deliver on the field, but deliver in terms of your attitude and your behaviour off the field as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you get that kind of money. Oh, gee whiz. Absolutely. Without any question whatsoever. We're going to take our first break at 16 past 12. Love you to join us to talk about your club, 9429 1116. Or you can text through your thoughts on 0433 98 11 16. Nick Bowen's in the studio to talk footy here on Sunday Sports Central. 20 past 12 here on Sunday Sports Central, 11:16 SEN. I'm Kevin Hillier here till we go to the A-League for the big Melbourne City Central Coast Mariners game at 5 o'clock this afternoon. And, of course, extended coverage from the Gold Coast 600 with Tony Shebeki and the team at the V8 Supercars. But we're talking footy now with Nick Bowen from AFL.com.au. Who did you see as the big winner out of trade week?
A pretty obvious one, Kev. I think the Cats. But you know, I think when you get Dangerfield, I mean, he's one of the best players in the comp, and you can put him alongside Joel Selwood in the midfield. They're going to be pretty scary. And Mitch Duncan, I think, is another great player who perhaps had his injury problems this year. So if those guys are all up and firing, they're going to be pretty strong. With, obviously, Scott Selwood, who they get for free through free agency in there as well. He's got the question marks over his ankles, but if he can get fit, that's another experienced sort of body that goes in there. Henderson's an interesting one from Carlton. I think that... there is an argument that a future first-round picks could be overs for him. But I think in a team that's up and flying, and if he's played predominantly down back, I think that's his best position. I think he'll be a good player. But I think it also summarises a bit the Cats, their attitude towards trading, that they probably recognise that you're not always going to have the perfect pick to get someone. Most times players probably sit, their value sits between your picks. But why quibble about it? Just get the deal done. They're never the club on the last day trying to get a deal done. They've got Henderson locked up a week out. So you can argue they've paid too much, but I think that it's at the margin, and they've got the player locked away. I think sometimes other clubs perhaps could take a take a lesson from that. And I think that that's where other clubs also really happy to sort of deal with them as well. And they obviously get Zach Smith from two Hendersons, but Zach Smith from the Gold Coast Suns to shore up the ruck division a bit as well.
Yep.
And that was a bit of a bargain. So I think that that'll be interesting to see how he goes.
Because their other big bloke went north, didn't he?
Yeah, Dawson Simpson, who's had, you know, over 8 years, only played the 28 games. I think he's a better player than that, but he's just, like a lot of the big blokes, very injury prone. So they shore that up. They'll certainly be hoping that Reece Stanley's fit. They'll be hoping that, you know, Mitch Clark's fit as well. So I imagine if Stanley's fit, he's probably the number one ruckman, takes that as a really athletic sort of follower type, and getting Mitch Clark sort of chopping out and giving him a hand. But I think that they're just probably realising that those guys have been injury prone in the past. Getting Zach Smith in there, I reckon, gives them really great insurance.
Yeah. My opinion of the draft's always been that it's more for teams, two ends to it, I guess. More for like a Hawthorn to get a Brian Lake to fill up a little gap they can see to help them win a premiership, which is obviously what they did. And the other one is for the Carltons of the world, as they sit right now, to actually get some players who are going to come in and make a difference to their side.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. I think Carlton was the one that surprised me with them was Troy Menzel, because I think that he's got a lot of ability, but I suppose their theory is that if you want to get something, you've got to give up get something good. You've got to give up something good. So
but they haven't got a lot that's good.
Well, that's my point. And I think that, you know, if I'm a Carlton supporter, I'm looking at Patrick Cripps as the future. Yeah. And I thought that Troy Menzel would be a big part of that as well. So you want to get your quality juniors in there, all the young guys, and really build around them. So the thing that worries me a little bit is they ended up getting five players in for Menzel effectively in that deal, Sam Kerridge from Adelaide and the four Giants boys. How many of them are going to be good players? I mean, we don't know. The you know, Plowman is one of the Giants.
Well, you'd like to think that Stephen Silvani's had a very good look at him and has cherry-picked the ones that he thinks have got a future.
Yeah, look, and that's the thing, if I'm a Carlton supporter, that gives me comfort, is that you know that Soss, as the former Giants list manager, knows these guys intimately. I mean, he selected most of them, so he's got a good idea of what they're worth. They've obviously, you know, say Lachie Plowman's in a package deal for pick 28. Well, he hasn't delivered on that number three billing from, say, 3 years ago that he was taken in the draft, but you don't lose your ability overnight. It's obviously a pretty hard team to break into, the Giants, in terms of that the young talent they have there. So they'd be banking on him to sort of come good. But yeah, look, it's one of those ones, Kev. Most players who get to another club, generally, if you haven't made it your first club, you don't become a world beater overnight. So I'm just wondering whether they've gone down the quantity route rather than the quality route. But
is there also maybe a factor in there that the kids that have been, you know, taken from all parts of the country, thrown into the west of Sydney in a team that was, you know, initially getting belted, and has become a competitive team in the last year, and there's all that going on as well in their heads as they're trying to sort of put their footy together?
Quite possibly. I mean, these two franchises, I think everyone just thought, look, you get all these draft picks together, these high early draft picks, and they're going to become great teams. Well, we've seen the hurdles the Suns have already had, and it remains to be seen just how this GWS sort of team will mould together. It's really new territory, so it's obviously some difficulties and some hardships about it that no one probably anticipated. So yeah, I think for these players to get to an established club might give them a bit of a better run at it. But it's going to be hard yards in this Carlton team for the next couple of years, Kev. They've really knocked the guts out of it. But again, the one thing Stephen Silvani's been able to do as well is assemble four picks inside the first 19 selections. So that's really important for Carlton. They have to get that young talent there, develop it, and then retain it. So I think that's been a big emphasis too. So I think out of their trade period, they have had a largely successful one, the Blues, I reckon.
The Bombers, how did you evaluate what they did?
Look, I think the big thing for them obviously was the Carlisle one and making that one work, because there was talk at various points when I think Carlton were really hot on him that he might go through the preseason draft. Now, to lose a player like that a year after you've lost Paddy Ryder, I reckon, would have been an absolute disaster. I think that they made the running in that trade. They really forced St Kilda's hand by getting Hawthorn involved. So once Hawthorn had pick 15 and 18 on the table, I think that St Kilda's hardline stance about pick 5, they couldn't maintain that anymore. That had to come on the table if they were going to get that deal done. Having said that, I think the Saints did well to salvage a first-round pick out of that deal by getting the Swans involved. Mm. Perhaps they were a bit lucky, though, in the sense that these teams with academy selections are really more points hungry necessarily than early picks hungry. So in the old days, I don't reckon that the Swans would have parted with pick 14.
Yep.
But they were happy to do that, knowing if they get some picks in the 20s, that gives them more points than pick 14 anyway. So it's a bit of a new landscape, and I think that the Saints had helped them get the deal done in that sense.
Now, Professor Bowen, can you explain the point system to me? Because I must admit, I was listening to Half and Brett Anderson, and they were going through all the permutations there on that last afternoon, and they were talking about the academy points. And in all honesty, I felt like I was back in year 11 in the algebra class listening to someone speaking, you know, Zoolander.
Yeah. Well, I think the point system has come in to basically ensure that teams who get an academy player or a father-son pay a fair price.
Yep.
So say in the old days, say Isaac Heaney last year was rated, I think from memory, Melbourne bid pick 2. And the Swans have got to match that. And I think from memory, their pick was, I think, 18 after when that had been pushed down the order because of the Frawley compo pick. So they're basically just getting a pick 2 player for pick 18. Now, this system is to ensure that they're worth a fair price. So I don't have the scale in front of me, but for argument's sake, I know pick 1's worth 3,000 points.
Right.
So say pick 2's worth 2,700. Pick 18, for argument's sake again, because I don't know the exact thing, might be worth 1,300. So the Swans in that scenario would then have to make up about 1,500 points. So they do that by using their next pick and their pick after that, which are basically ranked, allocated a points value.
Yep.
And then, so the Swans are then pay up to the pick 2 price. I think what's become interesting is that's a good mechanism to ensure clubs are paying a fair price in that matching bid scenario. But does it really alter the weighting that some clubs are giving to picks when they're actually trading? It's given a very different look. Like, I think in the past, if you're looking to trade out pick 8, you wouldn't be looking to give it for pick 23 and 25. But at one stage, the Bombers held both of those picks. And I think that deal could have been done. The Giants held pick 8, Bombers pick 23 and 25, and pick 23 and 25 gave an actually slightly greater points value than pick 8. Now, I don't reckon in say, last year that anyone would have traded pick 8 for pick 23 and 25.
No.
You might have been looking at, say, pick 14, pick 18, something like that, to split the pick into giving you two players rather than one, and two players at a, you know, in the first round, but you wouldn't have been doing that. So that's where I think a lot of people probably look at that and think it seems a ridiculous deal, but the Giants in that scenario were never going to probably get to use pick 8 because they've got academy players who are going to have to bid that pick, so that they're not losing their access to a top 8 player. They've got a top 8 player who they're going to have to take as an academy player, and picks 23 and 25 get that job done points wise every bit as well, slightly better than pick 8. So it's just going to take a while, I think, for everyone to get their heads around exactly how it works.
We're going to have mathematicians for a list manager, and the bloke sitting next to him is not going to be the recruiter. It's going to be a mathematician.
So there's software that's coming in for this year's draft that is meant to give clubs a very quick answer to exactly what they've got to bid for a certain player. So they think, okay, well, here's our player. Someone's bid pick 3. This is what we've got to give up. Is it worth giving that up? Now, I reckon they'll know that ahead of time, but they'll be sitting outside of the main room this year, so there's a bit more, I suppose, intrigue. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the I don't know, every time new software's trotted out, it makes me slightly nervous. So I'm sure the AFL will be really sweating to see that it works as it intended on the night.
We'll finish up with, remember that thing we used to have during the political debates, the little thing that used to go up and down, the snake?
The worm?
We'll have the worm going up and down. If you hit the top part of the worm, yes, you can have him. If you don't hit the top part of the worm, you can't have him.
Yeah.
It complicates it. And I must admit, I glossed over you would do an algebra again when people started talking about they've traded this pick for this pick for this pick for this pick. So we've now got picks 22 and 23 and we've given up. That just did my head in too during the week, I have to admit.
Well, it's just hard, isn't it? I think it's you've got clubs working at different things. Like, I think Melbourne got involved with Gold Coast and GWS with this points thing. So you've got GWS and Gold Coast trying to accumulate points for their academy players.
Yep.
And you've got Melbourne quite justifiably trying to get up the order. So Melbourne start with pick 6 in the draft and they end up with picks 3 and 7. So they've done really well. So, and I think that, but Gold Coast and GWS, it's worked for them as well because of that, that point system. So you've really had the non-academy clubs look at that and try and exploit it to get themselves up the order and have done it well.
Yep. And the father-son one, that works in exactly the same way, does it?
It does. I'm not the guru on these things, Kev, but you've got to match the points thing. And I think from memory, I think they're both 25%. So the club who takes the player gets a reduction on the actual value. So there is a recognition that it's a nice thing for a father-son to still go to his father's club. So the club gets a bit of a points reduction there, but ultimately they're paying a much fairer price than they used to.
Yep. And young Rice chose St Kilda?
Yes, he did. Yeah, which is interesting. His father obviously played, I think almost Dean would have, I think he was pretty even on the games he played for both clubs, but a premiership player at Carlton from memory. So a good get for the Saints.
Yep, definitely. And there's a few father-sons around. I think the Doggies have got a few that they're having a look at as well.
Doggies have always got a few father-sons, Kevin. They've done pretty well over the journey with Liver and
breeders,
Wallace.
Good little breeders, the Bulldogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Good little breeders. Exactly. Happy to take your calls at any particular... Oh, Stephen Silfani's son's the other one that I was trying to think of.
Yeah, he's I think he'll get to the Blues, but he's probably going to be a bit of a later pick. He's a big lad, and I think that he looks like that quintessential late developer. So I think that...
He's had some injury problems too, hasn't
he? Yeah, he has. And I think that Steve has really been keen to... take him along slowly, let him develop without the pressure that I suppose goes with being a really famous name.
Yeah.
Because obviously the Silvani connection goes back to Stephen's dad, Serge. So it's a really proud Carlton tradition. And I think it'll continue, but I think that he'll get to go at a relatively later pick. So hopefully without the pressure that would have been otherwise there.
It is 24-1 here on 11:16 SEN Sunday Sports Central. And Nick Bowen from AFL.com.au is in the studio. Lee's on the line from Lilydale with a question for you. Nick, g'day, Lee. Hello, Lee. Lee's the strong silent type and sort of didn't have a question, maybe choked a little bit on the end. The interstate clubs, Brisbane, obviously, were looking for a priority pick and all those sorts of things. They lost Aish, which I think they thought that was going to happen, and then they didn't think it was going to happen.
That was one of the most drawn-out ones, Kev. It was really surprising because obviously their season finished after the home and away, and you had guys like Charlie Dixon announcing his intention to go, I think, the Monday after that ended. And Adam Treloar announced, I think, on the Tuesday that he was out the door as well. So, but Aish wasn't really until, I think from memory, the week that the free agency period started that he said he wanted to trade. Brisbane, I think, certainly got their hopes up during that time that he might have sort of come around. He attended the Best and Fairest count during that time, which is probably not normally the behaviour of someone who's out the door. My gut feel was Collingwood was always the desire all along, but he would have been mindful that they had, you know, had a lot of irons in the fire that they had to get done. Treloar, the big priority, ended up with Jeremy Howe as well. So once that became more of a reality, he sort of put his hand up to get there. So that was a loss for the Lions. I think that they've done pretty well to get some experienced bodies in there. I think Ryan Bastanac from North will be a pretty good pickup. Tom Bell, you know, really played well for Carlton in a difficult year, so he's a big body lad. So given they lost Jack Redden as well to West Coast, they needed to get some more midfielders in there, and they've done that. And they get Josh Walker in there, I think, who's not a... I don't think you want him as your number one forward, your number one tall forward, but he's a good second or third foil, and I think he'll be good for the development of some of the younger kids that they're looking to develop over time down there.
Well, any of the people that left blokes at left clubs, did any surprise you?
Look, Menzel was the one probably that came out of the blue. I think that most of the other ones were on the radar for quite some time. You know, there was the Doggies sniffing around for Matthew Lobie from Port Adelaide, which came out at the 11th hour. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
But in some ways, that was a pretty logical one because the Dogs has been sniffing around Stephen Martin early days, and that the Lions quickly put the kibosh on that one. But I think Lobie would have been a really good fit at the Kennel. But he's pretty keen to sort of, I suppose, stick it out at Alberton Oval, see how he can fit into that team. But, you know, when you've got Paddy Ryder there, who seemed to take the number one mantle late this year, and you've got now Charlie Dixon, who's a really good mixture of forward and support ruckman, it's going to be interesting to see whether they can fit Lobie in the same team.
Absolutely. Now, Lee in Lilydale is on the line. Now, g'day, Lee.
G'day, Kev. How G'day, boys. One of you boys labelled me a choker. What was that about?
We thought you must have choked on your sandwich or something while you're waiting on the line to come on and couldn't talk.
Gee, harsh criticism, boys.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Nick, just a question for you.
Yes, mate.
So let's throw a name at you so we can work off the formula.
Yep.
Let's say a club in the top 10 bid for Keys, young Keys, the academy player.
Yes.
Brisbane then have to use, obviously they use their first pick on Shacky. They then have to use a multiple. Let's say three picks, maybe to tally up, say 48, 49, 50.
Yep.
Do those picks, once they're used to bid on Keys, then come out of the actual draft, so therefore the picks behind them then move up three spots?
It's an interesting one. I think what basically happens is, say for argument's sake, Keys was to someone at three bids on him. The way the draft order will be done is we assume Carlton take Wiedering at one, the Lions take Shacky at two. The draft order will then be that the Lions take Keys at three. So, and what happens is their picks then get shunted down to the spot in the order where the point sort of dictates that they should go. So it might be pick 70, might be pick 80 or something like that. So it's going to be... I think take a while for people to get their head around exactly how it works, but that's how the new system will work. And say last year, for example, with Isaac Heaney, the Swans, when Melbourne bid pick two, the Swans would then go in the official order of the draft that they have taken Isaac Heaney at pick two, and their other picks get shunted down the draft until they've actually paid that price. So I think it'll take probably a few examples in practice leave till we all really get our heads around it fully as to how it works. But that's my loose understanding of how it'll operate.
Good on you, Lee. Thanks for your call. Stacey in Roville off the SMS said, my maths teacher said one day I'd use Pythagoras' theory when I grew up. I just didn't expect to be using it to figure out the AFL draft system. Yeah. I think I'm with you there, Stacey. Barry's in Northcote. G'day, Barry.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm looking at how much improvement my side, Collingwood, will improve next year. If I look at Reed, he didn't put much of a pre-season training in last year. He should be fit. If I look at the added Treloar, with Treloar and the Melbourne fellow and Ash, and if I look at the tiredness of the young blokes, who obviously tired as the year went along, because it's a long year last year, and they'll obviously improve and mature because they're only young. And I just wonder, what do you think? I put them down for the eight next year.
Oh, I think as a minimum, Barry, they'd be hoping to make the eight. I rate Adam Treloar as one of the best young midfielders in the comp. He's 22. He can win the ball, win his own ball, and he sort of he'll give you that run as well. So he's to me, really looms as that sort of complete midfielder. So he goes in there with Pendlebury and Swan, and you bat that bit deeper as well. James Aish is one who probably polarises people. Some people see him as an out-and-out gun. Others just see him as an okay player. So it'll be interesting to see his development, I think, at Collingwood. He could be, but again, his upside, he could be very, very good. He's certainly a great ball user. So there's a, you know, I think your midfield is stronger for that already, even though Nathan Freeman leaves to join St Kilda. It'd be interesting to see how Jeremy Howe goes.
Yeah,
I think,
I'm intrigued again, with that one.
He's got 100 games under the belt, 25. Been tough for him at playing at Melbourne, like it has been for most of the D's players. I think that they've got him in mind for a really high forward role, running hard, perhaps drifting up onto the wing as well. So might be hanger time down at Collingwood games. So look, I reckon Barry, you're right. They look a lot stronger on paper already. You've got a lot of players who should be ready to go. So I think with a bit of injury luck to guys like Ben Reid, the Pies could not only make the eight, they could be pushing up towards, perhaps, you know, 5, 6, maybe even knocking on the verge of the top four.
Just get Travis Cloak to kick straight. You'll be there, Barry. Thanks for your call. Rod's in Hallam. G'day, Rod.
Yeah, g'day. How are you, boys?
Good, thank you.
I'd just like to know about the Bulldogs and their first pick in the draft. They've shunted that off to get two later picks. Is that right? Because I don't think we paid anything for cycling from Hawthorn.
No, that's right, Rod. There was you had pick 11. That was, I think, the lure that the bait that the Dogs were throwing out to try and get Matthew Lobe from Port. When that wasn't going to happen, when he put the kibosh on that, you've then late in the piece traded that down for pick 20 and pick 21 from Carlton. So I only can imagine that Jason McCartney and Simon Dalrymple have some players in mind around that 20 to 21 mark who they thought, look, we're pretty keen on getting two players there rather than just the one at 11. But yeah, look, it's could be creative recruiting, work quite well. It's certainly something that Stephen Wells has done really effectively at Geelong in the past.
Hey, Rod, just wanted to ask you, as a doggy supporter, what's your take on Jared Grant not being offered a contract?
I was a bit surprised, Kevin, because I thought he's not the worst player we got there, and he adds a bit every so often, although he's much maligned in that, but I think he's a good value for us.
Yeah, I sort of tend to agree, to be honest. I'm sure there's a strategy behind it, but...
Yeah, he probably had one of his better seasons, didn't he, this year,
I thought.
And he's someone that the Dogs have put a lot of time into that... You would have thought that having got that he's probably worth, you know, a spot in your 38 or your best 40 on the list. But I imagine that Luke Beveridge just doesn't rate him as highly as others and just thought, look, that's not where we're going.
Yep. Good on you, Rod. Appreciate your call. Rob is in Strathmore. G'day, Rob.
G'day, boys. How are you?
Going well.
Mate.
It's good. I'm an Essendon supporter.
You poor bugger. haven't you had a rough couple of years?
Yeah, it's been shocking. Oh, we won't go into it, but Essendon desperately, in my opinion, needs midfielders, and looks like Melbourne are going to grab Parrish. Now, from the look of it, you've got blokes like Wiedemann and Francis who are talls. I don't really know, looking at the top 10, who's Essendon got a chance of picking up that's going to be a good midfielder, because it looks like there's a lot of talls in the top 10.
Look, to be honest with you, Rob, I've probably had my head in the trades more than the draft. Put my hand up and say that I know that the Bombers were really keen on Parrish. I'm not really sure that the players sort of they'll target around there. But you know, with picks 4 and pick 5, I would have thought there'd be some decent sort of prospects there. You know, the Bombers were obviously really targeting that pick 5 from St Kilda in the Carlisle deal. So I'd rest assured, mate. You get a pretty good player there, and I think that you know, you might go two midfielders because the spine's pretty good. Perhaps you might go another tall, given Carlisle's gone. But look, it's probably time for me to start burying my head in the phantom drafts and get a better idea, Rob. Sorry, I couldn't help you on that one.
All right, good on you, Rob. Thanks for your call. John's in Pascoeville. G'day, John.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks.
Quick question. I was raising. I'm happy that we got Treloar, we got Aish, and we got Howe. But I'm raising the question why they didn't look more for also a forward to support Cloak. I understand we've got White and we've got Howe there, but given the way that Cloak kicks and his age, I raise a question about the potency up forward.
You know what, mate? I think that's a simple thing. They're not that easy to come by, John. I think that they probably had Dixon, who was out this year, and he pretty quickly nominated Port. Have a look at Freo. They've been trying to get a key forward for probably the past 4 or 5 years. It's just really not that easy. So I think that the Pies would be looking at where they're at and thinking, okay, well, we've got Travis Cloak around for quite a while to come, still a few years.
Oh, yeah.
They've got Darcy Moore to develop, and they're probably just looking for that right target, and they don't come around that much. So I think it's clubs are looking to be discerning and to get that right sort of player. So if they're not there, you're probably best to hold fire and wait for next year or go through the draft. So that'd be my thinking, that they're just not that easy to come by, John.
John, you just have to look at what the Doggies had to do to get Boyd.
Yeah,
GWS. Yep. I mean, the amount of money and for him, the amount of money they're paying for Griffin, and you know what they gave up was a heck of a lot. So yeah, they don't. Unfortunately, they don't grow on trees, John. But thanks for your call. Michael's in Mill Park. Hi, Michael.
G'day, fellas. How are you?
Good.
Well, mate.
Yeah, I'm a Richmond supporter, and you know, pretty stoked with the Aaron trade. But my biggest question is, I think Richmond, you know, for some time have desperately needed a small forward, and the Aaron's probably a bit versatile. But where do you think he'll fit into Richmond's side?
Well, look, I reckon he's, Michael, I reckon he's best off halfback personally. I think that's where he's probably played his best footy. He gives, when he can run straight at the ball and take on the opposition, I reckon he's a really fantastic player. I think 2014, finished fourth in the Blues' best and fairest, probably his best year. Look, he's a dangerous small forward, but I think that's one of the hard positions, and you can tend to go missing there a bit. But I think if he plays predominantly halfback, and perhaps drifts forward every now and then, I think you'll probably get the best value out of Yaron there. But look, I agree with you, Michael. I think he's a really good pickup. He had a tough 2015, but I think that playing in that Carlton side this year wasn't easy. And you know, it's easy for people to probably remember this year, but I think as a Richmond supporter, I'd be pretty excited by what he can bring.
Are you pretty excited about 2016, Michael?
Yeah, I am. I'm really excited. I think I was a little bit disappointed. I thought there were a little chance of Treloar there, but You know, Collingwood obviously tabled a good offer and just got to go with it. But, I reckon we're a big chance of hopefully winning a final next year.
Well, you went really close, Michael, if it's any consolation with Treloar. And I think when those big fish come out of contract, it's there's obviously no shortage of competition for it. All you can do is put your hat in the ring and have a crack, and you did that. And I think then the hard part is to, when you do miss out, is to sort of basically take a deep breath and say, look, we're not just going to go after anyone for the sake of it. We don't want to go on a Michael Voss-style, you know, splurge like he did at the end of 2009. So it's disappointing to miss out on those sort of players, but I reckon that Dan Richardson and the list management team sort of did the right thing and got Yaron across the line, which was a good result.
Yep, absolutely. Good on you, Michael. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. 9429 1116. We've got a couple of minutes with Nick before we head to the V8 Supercars. The first round has been published in one of the papers, obviously not the one I'm flicking through right now, today. So the draw obviously will come out sometime this week.
I believe, and I've got, I'm on leave at the moment, so my head's sort of gone out of this, but I think it's next Thursday.
Richmond Carlton on the Thursday night, Melbourne and GWS at the MCG on the Saturday, Gold Coast and Essendon at Metricon, a twilight game, Sydney and Collingwood at ANZ Stadium, that's the night game. So there won't be a game in Melbourne there will, Melbourne and GWS. And North Melbourne and Adelaide at Etihad at night. Then the Sunday will be the Doggies and Fremantle at Etihad Stadium.
Yep.
Port Adelaide and St Kilda at Adelaide Oval. And West Coast and Brisbane Lions at Subiaco.
Okay.
And the Monday night game, which is always a beauty, Geelong and Hawthorn. So the Doggies, I think the Doggies and Collingwood were pushing for the round one Friday night game, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I like that. I do like the Richmond Carlton opening to the season. I reckon that's one worth keeping. And the Easter Monday game has just become a cracker, hasn't it, with Hawthorn and Geelong. So
that is a beauty.
And given it was a relatively one-sided one this year, but I don't think it'll be anywhere near like that next year. I think that as we've mentioned, that the Cats sort of draft, their trade period should make that a really cracking contest.
No, that's a good first round. Probably Collingwood and the Doggies will play because that, of course, is Good Friday and we don't play football on Good Friday.
Not yet. No.
I'm glad you put that in because that's exactly what it would have, I think, is going to be the case. The International Series.
Yes.
Is there any interest? And I'd love, give us a call if you are interested in what goes on, apart from the fact that you don't want any member of your club getting injured. But do you think it's still a viable thing for the competition to be pursuing and throwing a lot of money at, given that are we not flying the partners of the players to New York or something?
We are, yes.
So
yes.
We're obviously throwing a truckload of money.
The AFL are determined to keep it going. And I think that, I reckon it becomes viable when you've got the best players playing. Now, and it's gone back to the one test sort of format. So the people who are going over, they're lucky enough to go over there. I went on the last trip, which was great. But they're going to stop over in New York this time.
Got no interest now because you've not got the freebie trip over there.
Well, I didn't say that, Kev. No. Very interested. But the Pete Ryan from our office is just trundling over to New York for 6 days or so. So that's tough, isn't it? So
it's terrible. You know,
so he'll have a good time over there. So I think that it really has to be competitive, and I think the last game was a good one. And I think that as long as they can get the All-Australian players playing and putting their hands up and wanting to be a part of it, then I think that it's a decent concept. But look, do I struggle with the fact that we don't use our own ball and that the Irish have that real advantage? Oh, yeah, I do. But I think that it's a hybrid game. It's the best sort of result we're probably going to get in terms of if you want to play an international game. And take it for what it is. It's not footy, but it's probably the next best thing we can get to play on the international stage and just enjoy it, I think. But it's a different game.
You do put your crystal ball on the table and what's the first highlight for you that you're looking forward to in 2016?
Well, I reckon just to see how the Geelong team goes. I think just to see whether they can just go straight back up to the top, see Dangerfield playing alongside Joel Selwood and how that Geelong midfield works, I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating because, look, they've paid a high price to get all these players in.
Yeah, they have.
As everyone said, they've had a fantastic trade period, but look, they've given away their first round pick this year and next year. So if this doesn't work, it could really set them back for quite some time. But
I've got a feeling it's going to work.
Well, you know what? Most things Stephen Wells touches turn to gold. So I think that, you know, they could be back in town pretty quickly. And it's a really unique list build the way they've gone about it. And a really ballsy sort of move, but all kudos to them.
Absolutely. Now, you're officially on holidays.
Yeah, for the next week or so.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, enjoy your week of recreation, whatever it is that you get up to.
Thank you very much,
Kev. All right, good on you, Nick.